So we begin reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 23, The Demigods Regain the Heavenly Planets, and there's only a translation for text number 3. Shukadeva Goswami continued, after speaking in this way, Bali Maharaj offered his obeisances, first to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, and then to Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Thus he was released from the bondage of the Naga Pasa, the ropes of Varuna, and in full satisfaction, he entered the planet known as Sutala. Purport. Oh, translation for text 4. Thus, having delivered the proprietorship of the heavenly planets to Indra, and having fulfilled the desire of Aditi, the mother of the demigods, the Supreme Personality of God had ruled the affairs of the universe. Text 5. When Prahlad Maharaj heard how Bali Maharaj, his grandson and descendant, had been released from bondage and had achieved the benediction of the Lord, he spoke as follows in a tone of greatly ecstatic devotion. Text 6. Prahlad Maharaj said, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, Personality, you are universally worshipped even by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva worship your lotus feet. Yet although you are such a great personality, you have kindly promised to protect us, the demons. I think that such kindness has never been achieved even by Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, or the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, but to speak of other demigods of common people. Purport, the word Durga Pala is significant. The word Durga means that which does not go very easily. Generally, Durga refers to a fort, which one cannot very easily enter. Another meaning of Durga is difficulty, because the Supreme Personality of God had promised to protect Bali Maharaj and his associates from all dangers. He is addressed here as Durga Pala, the Lord who gives protection from all miserable conditions. Text 7. O Supreme Shelter of everyone, great personalities like Lord Brahma enjoy their perfection simply by tasting the honey of rendering service at your lotus feet. But as for us who are all rogues and debauchees, born of an envious family of demons, how have we received your mercy? It has been possible only because your mercy is causeless. Text number 8. Kshetram tavehi tamaho mitav yoga maya. Lila visrishta bhuvanasya virashadradasya. Sarvatmana samadrisho vishamasabhavo. Bhakta priyo yadasi kapataru sabhavaha. Chitra. Very wonderful. Tava ihitam. All your activities. Aho. Alas. Amita. Unlimited. Yoga Maya, of your spiritual potency. Leela, by the pastimes. Vishrista Bhavanasya, of your lordship by whom all the universes have been created. Visharadasya, of your lordship, who are expert in all respects. Sarva Atmanaha, of your lordship, who pervade all. Samadrisha, and who are equal toward all. Vishamaha, without differentiation. Svabhava. That is your characteristic. Bhaktapriyaha. Under the circumstances, you become favorable to the devotees. Yet, because I see you are Kapataru Svabhava, having the characteristic of a desire tree. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Oh my Lord, your pastimes are all wonderfully performed by your inconceivable spiritual energy and by her perverted reflection, the material energy. You have created all the universes. As the super soul of all living entities, you are aware of everything and therefore you are certainly equal toward everyone. Nonetheless, you favor your devotees. This is not partiality. However, for your characteristic is just like that of a desire tree, which yields everything according to one's desire. Purport. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita, Samoham sarabhuteshu name dveshto stina priyaha ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya mai te teshu chapyaham. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all, but whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is certainly equal toward all living entities, but a devotee who fully surrenders at the lotus feet of the Lord is different from a non-devotee. In other words, everyone can take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord to enjoy equal benedictions from the Lord. But non-devotees do not do so, and therefore they suffer the consequences created by material energy. We can understand this fact by a simple example. The king or government is equal to all citizens. Therefore, if a citizen capable of receiving special favors from the government is offered such favors, this does not mean that the government is partial. One who knows how to receive favors from the authority can receive them. But one who does not neglect these favors does not receive them. There are two classes of men, the demons and the demigods. The demigods are fully aware of the Supreme Lord's position, and therefore they're obedient to him. But even if the demons know about the supremacy of the Lord, they purposely defy his authority. Therefore, the Lord makes distinctions according to the mentality of the living being, but otherwise he is equal to everyone. Like a desire tree, the Lord fulfills the desires of one who takes shelter of him, for one who does not take such shelter is distinct from the surrendered soul. One who takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord is favored by the Lord, regardless of whether such a person is a demon or a demigod. The very beginning of the seventh canto was about the killing of Hiranyaksha by Lord Varaha. And whether the question was raised by Hiranyakashipu, no less. Whether the Lord is actually just favorable to the demigods and unfavorable to the demons. And he gave the example, just like if you have a little child and you offer him a little bit of candy, then immediately he becomes your friend. So maybe the demigods offered Lord Vishnu a little candy, and therefore he decided to kill Hiranyaksha, the elder brother of Hiranyakashipu. And the conclusion is that Krishna is actually equal to everyone. He doesn't favor anyone. That everyone, according to what they desire, then Krishna is like a desire tree and he's fulfilling those desires. Similarly, his book, Srimad Bhagavatam, is compared to a desire tree. Nigama kalpa taro galitam palam sukamukam drava samyutam pibhata Bhagavatam amalam mohur maho bhuva bhavikaha. That this Srimad Bhagavatam is just like a desire tree Nigama Kalpa Turora Galitam Phalam. And it's giving fruits according to one's desire. Anyone can take anything one wants from the Kalpa Vriksha of Srimad Bhagavatam. As a matter of fact, at the end of many chapters, it explains that if you simply read this chapter and you hear it, you can conquer all your enemies. So if there's anyone that you don't like, you can just read the Srimad Bhagavatam really carefully and see what happens. And if nothing happens, then read it again. And if nothing happens, there's no loss. You can always go on to the next chapter. Maybe it'll work in the next chapter. Because actually the soul is not doing anything, nor is it entangled. All the soul is doing is desiring. And not that every desire the soul has, immediately Krishna fulfills it. That's not possible. Because it's not only according to what we desire, but we've desired so many things in the past, and we fulfill those desires by thinking, feeling, and then willing them into action. Willing them into action means that Krishna noted, oh, this soul is just thinking about desire. He's not serious. So therefore, I'm not going to actually manifest it. And then feeling, oh, it becomes a little bit more serious. He's actually experiencing it now by feeling. Now when it comes up to the soul actually willing, I want that desire to be fulfilled, then Krishna checks and sees what your merit is. And then decides whether or not, well then if he thinks that you deserve it, that's part of your karma, then he wills it that the material nature brings it into being. Just like there may be many people, when we look at them, we think, I want to kill that person. Hopefully not. You're smiling. Now, just by thinking about killing a person in this age of Kali Yuga, we don't get the reaction for killing such a person. Nor does a person die. The example is used just like a cow is walking in the road and the vultures are flying overhead, and they're desiring that the cow dies so they can eat it. Now, there may be some very unpleasant vibrations coming from the vultures, but generally they're not enough to kill the cow. So however much they actually want the cow to die so they can eat it, it doesn't really, the cow just goes on eating the grass. In previous ages, just by thinking about something, then one would get the reaction for it. If you simply thought about killing someone, you get the reaction for killing someone. But lucky in Kali Yuga, we don't quite get the reaction. Although there may be some reaction. Because even scientifically they've discovered that if you simply think about doing something, actually there's some impulses going to the nervous centers. There's actually some aspect of doing something, however slight it may be. In any case, it says simply by thinking about something, we don't get the results. But if we think about something pious, then we actually get the credit for thinking about something pious, such as Kali Yuga, where people are just piling on their sinful activities and desires. So if they can do something, even think about something pious, even if they don't do it, they get some credit for it. In any case, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Udara Atmanatmanam Atmanam Avasarayat Adyaiva Yatmano Bandur Atmaiva Ripur Atmanaha, that a man must elevate himself to his own by his own mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. For one who has conquered the mind, for one who's conquered the mind becomes the best friend. For one who's failed to do so, it becomes the greatest enemy. For one who's conquered the mind, chitatmana prasantatma, paramatma samahita, chitoshna sukudukeshu, titamana pamanayo. For one who's conquered the mind, the super souls are already reached. for he has attained tranquility. For such a person, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor, all the same. In other words, we can tell if we conquered the mind if we're actually thinking about Krishna. Otherwise, the mind remains an enemy. Now, there's a class of people called demons, and the demons, all they're desiring is things against Krishna, against what Krishna wants. Therefore, they're called demons. Specifically, how do we know what Krishna wants? Well, you can get a crystal ball and you can look into it. That's one way. Maybe the mirror on the wall, what does Krishna want? Or Krishna says, Yakshastra vidim utsrija vartate kamakarata sasudim avapnoti nasukam na param gatim. The one who does not act according to Shastra, but whimsically, in other words, Shastra tells us what Krishna wants. And if we don't, then whimsical. What does whimsically mean? It means according to lust, anger, greed, under the spell of the illusion we're under, because the illusion we're under is just a more intense manifestation of lust, anger, and greed. It starts very subtle, something innocent, a little lust. And lust doesn't mean, oh, I need that. Lust means that, no, that looks nice. It would be nice to have it, to try to see what it would be like to enjoy it. That's called the beginning of lust. And if we actually advance further, and we actually get the object, and we like it, like a nice ice cream cone, and we eat the ice cream cone, and we think, I'm enjoying, that's called lust, unless it was offered to Krishna, of course. And then, we want another one, just another one, another ice cream cone. One wasn't enough. Give me the strawberry, no, the chocolate, and the vanilla, and the multicolored one. That's called greed. And what do you mean there's no more ice cream? Who ate it? Who took my ice cream cone? I'll search him out. That's called anger. And I'm a victim. I'm a victim of this person who stole my ice cream cone. I'm going to get even if it takes me 3 lifetimes. That's called delusion. And then the fact that we're Krishna's servant, we're not this body, Krishna's a controller, that just goes completely out the window. Oh, that's a fairy tale. That's some ancient book said that, but I don't believe it. I'm still going to get even. That's called forgetfulness. And our intelligence just goes right, our spiritual intelligence at least goes right out the window, and we just become absorbed in making plans. How am I going to get revenge and get justice? I'm a victim. I need justice. The whole world should stop till I get justice. So that's called bewilderment of loss of intelligence and just making plans how to become more deeply involved in material energy. And that's more or less what every conditioned soul does 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And that goes on until we're crawling on the ground or swimming in the air or whatever else happens to us as a result of that. But we're all justified because I was a victim. I deserve to become an ant. I'm going to be, even when I'm an ant, I'm going to find this person and bite them. Until finally, there's justice in the world. So every demon thinks like that, that the whole purpose of life, as Krishna says, is to gratify the senses, both the gross material senses and also the subtle ones, which revenge, honor, whatever else you want to pat the false ego, try to satisfy it. But as it explains here that actually Krishna is equal to everyone, as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita at the end of the third chapter on Karma Yoga. A pure soul is the eternal servant of God as his fragmental part and parcel. He comes in contact with Maya, illusion, through the desire to lord over Maya, and that is the cause of his many sufferings. So all our desire is to control the material nature, try to make an arrangement that satisfies us rather than Krishna. That's called lording it over the material nature. It doesn't mean I'm just lording it over this book. We're trying to lord it over all everything we look at, we're trying to lord it over. As one devotee was telling me when he was distributing books in a certain country, he'd hand the book to someone, and they'd look at it, and according to the color of the book, they would imagine what it would be like to eat the book. If it was brown, they'd think, well, this reminds me of chocolate. I like chocolate, so I think I'll buy it. It's called anamaya. One can't see anything beyond what it would possibly taste like. So that kind of mentality is rather primitive, to try to control the material natures and then see if we can somehow or another squeeze some happiness out of whatever we're controlling. Even we, as Prabhupada said, no one loves you, no one listens to you, so you get a dog and see if you can squeeze some pleasure out of the dog. He loves me. Oop, slip. Oh, that's confirmation of the romantic relationship I have with my pet dog. He'll stand by me, even if the cat attacks. As long as he's in contact with matter, he has to execute work in terms of material necessities. Anyone ever check the day and see how much we're just working for our material necessities? When Mother Nature calls us, we have to answer her. We don't say, well, Mother Nature, just wait a couple hours. Sorry, it's time. Yes, sir, whatever you tell me. Krishna consciousness, however, brings one into spiritual life even when one is within the jurisdiction of matter, for it is arousing his spiritual existence by practice in the material world. So it doesn't mean that spiritual life is going to be, suddenly we become devoted, we're making progress in spiritual life, and a second head sprouts in our body, because it changes our material karma. No, while we're struggling in material nature, whatever body we have, whatever our destiny is probably going to be, we have to try to endeavor to become Krishna conscious at the same time. So we may think, oh, now I'm experiencing something terrible. How did Krishna put me in this situation? He's a rascal. I didn't deserve it. I'm his devotee. I deserve much better. He's not very kind. He doesn't love me. He loves everyone else except for me. He doesn't like the way I look. There's something wrong with him. Well, that's actually something wrong with us to think like that. Because we're going to be tested in so many ways so we can practice. So the time of death, when we're about to leave our body, we don't think, wait a second, I don't deserve to die. I'm a nice person. I deserve to live forever. I've done so much service. At least 15 years, you know, for my service, I want back. Sorry, it's time to leave. Oh, this is unjust. No one has to be prepared, even at the time of death, to think about Krishna, remain in Krishna consciousness. What to speak of an ordinary thing, like someone takes, you know, steals my glove abdomen. If we're angry the whole day, meditating on that glove abdomen, seeing, you know, Sudarshan Chakra coming and cutting off the head of the devotee who did it. What to speak of something significant happens to us? What we're going to think about. The more one's advanced, the more he's freed from the clutches of matter. So what gets freed from the clutches of matter means we ourselves become freed from the clutches of matter. And the example is given, just like if you have a coconut, if you shake the coconut, you can't hear anything. Well, when the coconut becomes ripe, then the inside, which has the meat and the water in it, the actually hardest shell, It just falls out, and then when you shake it, you can hear it. So we either soul, we're in this body, and we're just absorbed, our consciousness is absorbed in the body, so much so, we're not even conscious of who we are, or what we're supposed to be doing. But by practice in the material world, if we can increase our spiritual consciousness, and think about Krishna's, chant Hare Krishna, feel Krishna's presence, remember his forms, his qualities, his associates, his activities, then gradually we enter into the spiritual realm, and our consciousness becomes absorbed in the spiritual consciousness, rather than the material consciousness, and then we become transcendental to material consciousness. Just like a person, he may have a very painful toothache, but it's his favorite soccer game going on, or football game. And he's watching it during the whole time. So much absorbed in the football game, he forgets even that he has this horrible toothache. And then if his team wins, then the toothache goes away. Or if his team loses, then the toothache comes on twice as strong as it was before. Now he always had the toothache, but he was unaware of it because he was conscious of something else for some time. So similarly, when we become conscious of Krishna, simultaneously we become unconscious of our problems in the material existence. They seem insignificant. Because after all the problems of material existence that really disturb us is the one problem is that we think we're going to die when the body dies. And because we think the body is going to die when we die, therefore it's a big problem for us. And most of the work in the material world, most of our endeavor, most of our desires is to keep the body alive and functioning so we don't die. We go on enjoying the 2 or 3 sweets that we eat every day. That's the goal of our life. The Lord is not partial toward anyone. So this is a very difficult thing to comprehend for the conditioned soul, that what's happening is not due to the Lord. He's supposed to be the controller, so he's responsible. I'm a victim. Ultimately, now I've gotten the complete understanding how I was always a victim because I'm not controlling. I'm always a helpless victim. It's God who's controlling everything. He's the blame. If something good happens, it's because I'm a good person. So naturally good things happen to good people. If something bad happens, it's because of that rascal controller who put me in this difficult situation that I don't deserve. But when one realizes that actually we're not in a difficult situation, except for the fact we think we are. When one realizes that actually the difficulty is I'm not putting myself in a proper situation, Krishna is offering the spiritual world for me and I'm rejecting it for this one. It's all right, Krishna, it's all right, just wait a little bit, you know. When I'm ready, I'll accept the spiritual world, but I got a few things to do down here. But it's been 15,000 lifetimes you've been telling me that. That's all right, be patient. We're all eternal, you're eternal, I'm eternal. So just be patient. Everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness. So everything depends upon how much we concentrate our minds and give our love to Krishna. That's all. Very simple. If we're distracted by so many other things in the material world, then we're not going to concentrate our minds on Krishna. What to speak of give our love to him? Yes, yes, Krishna, I'll accept you as soon as I have all these desires fulfilled. As soon as you make my life perfect, then I'll give up the material world and enter into the spiritual world. Once my material life is complete and perfect, exactly the way I like it, then I'll surrender. And until that, I'll stay in the material world working for perfection. Everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness, which help one control the senses in every respect and conquer the influence of desire and anger. So Prahlad Maharaj said, there's no enemy in this material world except for the uncontrolled mind. So which demon is trying to control their minds and senses? Do you know of any? When these politicians start speaking to the populace, so they say, my dear citizens, now I've read the Bhagavad Gita, I realize we should all start controlling our senses and minds, then engage them in Krishna service. Enough with this lust, anger, and greed. We should all become surrendered servants of Krishna and use everything in the Lord's service. Did anyone ever hear a politician say like that? Or an educator? You go to the university and say, actually, the ultimate psychology is to surrender everything to Krishna. Then your mind will become peaceful and you will no longer have your real enemies, lust, anger, and greed. And one who stands fast in Krishna consciousness, controlling the above-mentioned passions, remains factually in the transcendental stage, or Brahma Nirvana. So in other words, if we're absorbed in the higher tastes of Krishna consciousness, then automatically the senses become purified by association with Krishna. Just like a blazing fire can turn firewood to ashes, so Krishna consciousness can burn to ashes the reactions of our previous activities, which are manifested in our material desires, the demands of our senses, our bewilderment, etc., can burn to ashes if we focus our mind and give our attention to Krishna and engage in His service, in Krishna consciousness. But material nature will always be inspiring us to do something other than that. We have so many things to do in the material world before we become Krishna conscious. But if we actually accept Krishna consciousness, even to a little bit more every day, then gradually the material desires will cease, gradually the demands of the senses will cease, gradually we'll enter into spiritual consciousness, we'll remember Krishna everywhere, all the time, in greater and greater intensity, greater and greater appreciation, greater and greater realizations, and then we'll actually one day realize who we are also, that we're actually Krishna's eternal servants. It's not just a theory, it's a reality. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Question. The senses are never satisfied and always want more. Is that because of the makeup of the body or is it coming from the soul?
Well, I don't know if the senses are never satisfied. Lust is never satisfied. You try to serve lust, they'll never be satisfied. But the senses can be satisfied. If you eat with devotion some nice prasadam, the senses become satisfied. If you eat anything with lust, then lust will simply grow. You can't blame the senses. It's our desire to serve lust that's the problem. We utilize the senses for our own satisfaction rather than for Krishna. That's the problem. And our own satisfaction means trying to scratch the itch. When we scratch the itch, then it goes away and we feel satisfied. Some tuchava, insignificant satisfaction for the soul. But if we give that up and tolerate, then the senses will actually be satisfied. Just like right now, how many of us are thinking necessarily of sleeping? So we're awake. We don't think, well, I'm awake. Maybe it would be good to go to sleep. Satisfy the idea of sleeping. No, that idea is satisfied when we get enough rest. The body doesn't demand to sleep when we're awake. We're actually awake and we had enough sleep. So there's only a certain amount of sleep needed. There's only a amount of certain eating that the body needs. Then it's satisfied. But if we eat just to satisfy ourselves rather than the senses, then lust becomes inflamed. And the poor senses have to try to eat more than they can, and then they can digest, and we get sick. So we're not really satisfying the senses at that point. We're satisfying lust. The senses, we'd rather we not try to overuse them. Anything else? Grandharaya Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hvala.